Welcome to KHEM Radio, the show that challenges what you think you know. The world, if you believe media and government, is filled with terrorists and pandemics. But there's a better world out there, and it's called reality. Hi, I'm Kay, and you're listening to this show thanks to Ab at Fakeologist.com. The benefit of being a fakeologist is that we don't have to worry about terrorists or pandemics because these are just scare campaigns. There's a lot of fakery out there, and we need to talk about it. Turns out, reality is pretty amazing. I thought that my journey to figure this all out was about facts and data, but it's about working with other people. Information and collaboration is a very powerful tool, and you are the key. Come to Fakeologist.com and join some conversations or start one yourself. This is July 2nd. Welcome to KHEM Radio. Hey, you get two welcomes today because it's a special day because we're going to go back to basics. We're going to look at 9/11 all over again because I think it needs to be repeated because it is like our template. This is episode 41 and we're going to... That one there says we need to talk about 911. First, I'd like to go to September clues, and I'll have these in the show notes, what I'm reading from. And they have an excellent link. Let me get to her. About 9/11. It's kind of like a primer, teaching y'all about it. Kind of bringing you along that little journey, the 9/11 journey of fakery. I think it really needs to be thought about every now and then. All right, let's get to it. Tour guide. This is the 9/11 tour guide. We're going on a tour, folks. So get your fanny packs and your sunglasses. And let's go. And again, all these links... If you would like to follow along with me, I'll be putting them in the chat where I'm talking from at fakeologist.com. So here's the first link. It's all in there. Tour guide to the September clues research. And this is at cluesforum.info. And Simon Shack wrote this. And by the way, that was Simon Shack's songs at the beginning of the stream before I started recording. For his new album, Reality. And I played song one. It was called Round in Circles. And round two, a sweet little song called Precious Baby. So those are Simon's. Hello and welcome to Clues Forum. We believe that media fakery is the most urgent issue to tackle in order to restore a bit of sanity on this planet. Media fakery is a weapon of mass distraction used by a pesky network of nutty power brokers. I like to call it the network. Well, I'm going to break in for a minute. Mass distraction instead of mass destruction. That is beautiful. Nice play on words, Simon. All right, I will continue. So the weapon of mass distraction used by a pesky network of nutty power brokers. I like to call it the network. To fool the world to their advantage. It has worked out nicely for them for centuries, for such is the essence of human nature, that when squarely duped, a man's ego will prefer to ignore the fact rather than dealing with it. The network and their subservient media conglomerates have long been well aware of this inherent weakness of mankind. Their news hoaxing tricks are routinely employed to generate incalculable profits and public consensus for waging murderous, barbaric wars of aggression. But their insane obsession for mass mind control is now turning against them. their wretched deception ploys are now exploding in their faces, one by one. Oh, yeah. Yes, they are. We're on to you, you nutwork. We've figured you out. Somewhat. It is fair to say September Clues research has established these four main points. Number one, the 9/11 imagery was but a Hollywood-style film production, complete with actors in the role of eyewitnesses or firefighters. Quote, that's in single quotes, firefighters, eyewitnesses, because I'm going to break in here for a minute, because they're actors playing firefighters. They're not actually firefighters. Unless a firefighter got paid to be an actor, then that actor's a firefighter. All right, back to the point. Staged running crowds, 3D compositing, and special cinematic effects. The 9/11 movie was split into a number of short clips and sold to the TV audience as newscasts. The few clips featuring airplanes, or dull silhouettes thereof, were computer-generated images, all of which in stark conflict with each other, as now comprehensively demonstrated in every imaginable manner, angle, and method. So that's point number one. I think this is where people think that 9/11 is such a giant production, because the clips were split up and put around to every, you know, handed around to newscasters and different news stations, different TV stations, different radio stations, podcasts. So it felt like it was much bigger than it was. But once we put all those together, it wasn't more than a couple hours of footage. It just feels like more because those clips, they're all cut up and spread out over the place. All right, number two. No commercial airliners were hijacked or, much less, crashed into the World Trade Center towers, the Pentagon, or Shanksville Field. No valid verifiable records exist for their airplanes' logs and schedules, their numbered parts, and their alleged passengers. The reported speeds at near sea level, as well as absurd visuals of their total effortless disappearance into the World Trade Center facades, defy the laws of mechanics and physics, and the absence of visible wake vortexes in the World Trade Center impact imagery also defies the laws of aerodynamics. I'm going to cut in here. If you've ever do that, if you're curious about that, go on YouTube and look up plane vortexes. Every plane has them. The amount of air being pushed out behind a jet engine is so enormous, it creates its own little tornadoes. And these little tornadoes pick up debris a lot of times, and they're visible. You can actually see them. Number three, the World Trade Center complex, 9 buildings in all, were demolished with powerful explosives. No image analysis of the tower collapse can help determine just what type of explosives were employed, since the videos are 3D animations and do not represent real-life events. In reality, as they collapsed, the World Trade Center complex was most likely enveloped by military-grade smoke obscurance. No real or private imagery exists of the morning events, thanks to electromagnetic countermeasures. Now, if you're thinking out there, yeah, some private person has some. Well, the FBI collected the days after 9/11. They went around to the different stores that developed film. And this is how it was back in the day before everything was digital, right? You took your camera film to the store, and especially for your youngsters out there, you know, there's a thing called pictures where you get them printed up and you can hold them in your hand, not on your phone. They're separate pieces of paper. They're called pictures for you youngins. And in order to get those pictures, you have to take this film that comes out of your camera, and you have to make sure that film didn't see daylight, otherwise it would ruin it. So you take the film from your camera. It's in a little roll about 2 inches long, and you stick it in its little black little container and snap that lid shut. Then you take it to the store. I used to work at a store in New Jersey where we did all tons of pictures. People, because there's no there was no other way to look at the film. You had to take them and get them developed. And we had some fun looking at people's, well, I was a teenager, you know, when people would bring in their pictures after they got developed, we would look through them and see what kind of naughtiness they were up to. I dare say more times than not, we regretted looking. But, so the story, the word on the street is that the FBI collected all, not only the processed film, but the unprocessed film. So they came and they collected all of it all over Manhattan and New York. So if there were private pictures taken, they were absconded. And a lot of people gave them up freely. They said, no, no, here, take my pictures. You know, give them back. Give them back when you're done, I guess. Maybe no one got them back. People were happy to help because they thought the FBI would crack the case. Crack the case with my picture. I'm going to be a hero if I give the FBI my pictures. So people were happy to get rid of all their evidence. It's not until they realize they've been duped that they're like, damn it, I wish I had those pictures. I would love to hear from anyone who gave the FBI your pictures and now regret it. Fakeologist.com. Get a hold of me. This is Kay. In the chat, go, hey, Kay. There, we have a chat where you don't have to be a member. Hey, Kay. I had pictures I gave them up. I'd like to talk to you about that, what you saw. So far, though, everyone who's claimed that they've seen the World Trade Center fall has been not quite truthful. And they always say the same thing. I wrote it down at some point. They say, it looked just like it looked on TV, a reverse mushroom cloud. That's it. I've heard more than one person say that who turned out to be not truthful. So if you're going to tell me that, well, let's discuss it. You might be the truthful one. All right, number four. We are going through the four main points that have been established from the September Clues research. Point number four. No 3,000 people were trapped on the top floor, nor perished in the World Trade Center towers. Only one thing was more important than the perps, than avoiding a mass murder of 3,000 U.S. citizens, to sell the notion that boogeyman bin Laden killed 3,000 U.S. citizens. We have renamed the victims of these PSY operations VICSIMs, simulated victims. In fact, our research has seen the same pattern emerge in all the so-called Al-Qaeda terror attacks around the world. The London 7-7, the Madrid 11, the Bali, the Mumbai, etc. In all logic, the very last aggravation the plotters behind these false flag operations wish to have are scores of real families hounding them forever with real questions and real class action lawsuits. Hence, no real terror victims equals logical PSYOP rationale. So those are the 4 points. Let's do them real fast. 1, all the imagery was made ahead of time. 2, no commercial airplanes slammed into the World Trade Center. 3, the World Trade Center was demolished with simple explosives like any other building in any other part of the world. And number 4, nobody died purposefully on 9/11. Now, there could be one or two. Someone said this, and I thought, well, I can't rule it out. Like, maybe an FBI agent killed a couple people to keep them quiet, and then they called them a 9/11 victim. Well, I don't know. That could have happened. But we're talking about the overall pattern here, is that pretty much no one died on purpose. That was a worker in the building. All right, let's keep a reading. Now, we're done with the 4 points, so now Simon is going to talk about the 9/11 event here. 9/11 is but a giant and still ongoing money-making scam. It rotates around the most well-funded and profitable hoax of modern history. Everyone involved in the scheme is reaping a sizable return from their investment bond, which naturally has silence printed all over it. For anyone to speak out would be both ruinous and suicidal, a most distasteful option. To be sure, suicidal heroics only exist in journalistic fairy tales, such as the outlandish news media's narrative of 9/11 and its 19 religious fanatics. the skeptics objecting to too many people would have had to be in on this. Okay, so here's too many people would have to have been in on this. That's what the skeptics say. They fail to account for the most fundamental aspect of human nature, our survival instinct. The master plan of 9/11 was to demolish the redundant, asbestos-filled World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan, 9 buildings in all. The area would naturally be evacuated, as for all such demolitions, in order to prevent a slaughterhouse of dreadful proportions. Not a good idea at all. To be sure, this was no mass murder scheme, just a formidable opportunity for massive financial gain and military propaganda. The military and its various intelligence affiliates would manage the ground logistics, such as securing the area, raising the smoke screens to hide the proceedings from the public view, and the last but not least, electromagnetic countermeasures to keep any private cameras from filming the mayhem. The World Trade Center complex was thus safely destroyed in bright daylight. It was a magician's trick, pulled off by sleight of hand to fool the few New York onlookers with the computer graphics to fool the world. The TV viewers. The rest was, and still is to this day, a gigantic simulation staged and upheld by the complicit news media propaganda machine. The major news corporations are headed by a handful of moguls who are, contrary to popular belief, wholly subservient to the executive powers of the USA, Great Britain, Europe, and indeed most of the world's governments. This unfortunate yet widespread public belief that the media checks and polices our politicians is being currently exploited to its fullest potential for the profit of a restrict so-called elite. Yeah, just a few elites are probably planning this all. In his time, George Orwell would have called the structure the network. I suggest what we have today is the network, since their inconsiderate behavior betrays telltale signs of rampant megalomania and an alarming absence of mental balance. Heck yeah. All right, let's go. There you go, September clues, my friend. I think it also helps. This is Kaham now. I'm not reading Simon's stuff. It helps to realize this has been going on for a long time, probably as long as men have been on Earth. I was reading some research about the Titanic. It was most likely an insurance swindle. So if you want to look that up, it's sister ship, the Olympic, and there's a third one. The Britannia or something like this. As the story goes, one of the sister ships, the Olympic, was hit by another ship. I can't remember if it was the U.S. Navy or the British Navy, but one of the ships hit it. They wouldn't pay. It was a brand new ship. So in order to get their money back, they switched the names from the Titanic to the Olympic, sailed the Olympic out, and sunk her. Did people die? I didn't research that far. But I have a feeling this has been going on for a long time, and probably most of the history we read about such attacks? I don't know. Alright, so let's go back to Simon now. Let me spell what this forum is about. We are a bunch of nice and open-minded people, but if you are to contribute to our ongoing research, make sure you have something valuable to offer. And I wanted to read that because this is like a science website. You can speculate if you want, but we're looking for cold, hard facts. We're looking for thoughts that lead somewhere to solve problems and issues. So it's very scientific. It's not just for fun. So if you want a real serious website about 9/11, Clues Forum is it. SeptemberClues.info. Then, from this page, we've got a couple links I want to talk about. Let's do the next link. It's The Power of Imagery. And this one, I read through this the other day, and I thought, I need to read that out loud. That is important. Let me put that in the chat. The power of imagery. Let's read. That's a good one. Television is and has always been a weapon of mass distraction. The power of TV imagery was the driving force behind the 9/11 deception. And perhaps that's what it best exploited, I would say. The day of 9/11 best exploited TV imagery. For myself, I was absolutely mortified. I had married an Arab. I already had 4 kids who were half Arab. I was like, oh my God, what did my people do? What did my adopted people do? I was mortified. I was like, this couldn't be. I was shocked. By this time, I had been to the Middle East 5 times. The longest stay was 6 months, almost 6 months. And I had not experienced any hate toward America at all from anyone in Jordan. So I was like, what's going on? Nobody hates America there. Where's this Al-Qaeda group coming from? People in Jordan loved America. They were standing in line to get visas to come here. So this, I had, even though in the movies, I saw a lot of Arab hate, and that confused me. I'm like, why are they picking on the Arabs? I remembered when we picked on the Chinese in the movie and on the Russians, and that made sense because of the Cold War for the Russians. But then they started picking on Arabs. I'm like, what are you talking about? So it didn't mesh with my reality as I knew it. So the TV imagery, though, man, I believed every minute of it when I first saw it. All right, let's get back. Whenever a major news event is reported by the mainstream media, it will invariably be illustrated with photographs or videos in order to convey to the public some visual impression of the event. Undeniably, the imagery connected with any given news story enhances our emotional relation to it. The way we relate to a news story... Let's go back. I skipped a line. The way we relate to news imagery has almost a hypnotic effect on our psyche. We have come to consider the visuals of any given news story as proof of that story's authenticity. This is truly a weak spot of our brains, readiness for critical thinking. Thus follows, unfortunately, that to challenge the authenticity of a catastrophic event shown on live TV is way beyond what most people are willing to contemplate. However, the time has come for everyone to call television by its appropriate military-sounding name, weapon of mass distraction. The 9/11 PSYOP relied foremostly on that weak spot of ours. We all fell for the images we saw on TV at the time, understandably so, as the sheer horror of the proposed imagery generated a wall of outrage and fear, thick enough to discourage any critical review of it. In hindsight, we only wonder why so few questioned the absurd TV coverage proposed by all the major TV networks. The picture at the left shows a moment at 8:59 a.m. of the 4 synchronized TV broadcasts of ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox, yet another indication that the 9/11 TV live broadcasts were managed by one single centralized studio. And so the picture shows 4 screens of one of the towers. I think it's a tower in front of the other tower, so it just looks like one kind of bigger tower. And they're all exactly from the same vantage point. They're identical from the same camera. What television viewers saw on 9/11? The 9/11 TV imagery of the crucial morning events was just a computer-animated, prefabricated movie. It featured, for the most part, what were meant to be chopper shots of the smoking towers and very little else. The sum total of action shots, which includes the plane crash and the tower collapse, amounted to little over 30 seconds of the entire morning's TV broadcast. 30 seconds! The plane crash and the tower collapse only amounted to 30 seconds. Needless to say, much of the rest of the animation movie, none of these action shots depicted any sort of reality. Now, it may be difficult for many of us to understand why 9/11 plotters needed to fake even the tower collapses, yet this was undoubtedly the most crucial aspect of the entire operation, and needs to be fully understood in its plain logic. The unprecedented World Trade Center demolition job was far too risky an affair to be shown on live TV, or let any amateur cameraman capture it on film. The 9/11 conspirators had no intention whatsoever to offer such a pyrotechnical spectacle to the world's scrutiny. Just imagine how unspeakably foolish this would have been. Thus, in all probability, the oldest trick in the manual of covert military operations was used: smoke screens. More recent technology deactivated temporarily all cameras within sight of the area. In reality, the towers were most likely enveloped in thick smoke, military obscurance as they collapsed, and no real footage exists of that brief event. Thankfully, for all normal people of this world, the 9/11 planners hired a poorly skilled animation crew in their efforts to simulate reality. Their crass artistry and countless mistakes provide ample and repeatable proof of the trickery, forever ingrained in the TV archives. Nice. Why fake the news broadcasts? The 9/11 TV broadcasts were designed to sell a fictitious terror attack to the world. And the key word there, I'm breaking in, the key word is sell. They had to sell it. This was a sales job, man. That's all this was, a sales job. Just like the analysis I did on the Alex Abella story where he wrote a book. He did a tell-all, an expose on the Rand Corporation. But really, the Rand Corporation gave him full access, and they approved his final manuscript. So I felt like that was a sales job, selling Rand Corporation services. And probably this is my next thing I'm trying to do. I'm trying to connect anything with 9/11, with that day, with Rand Corporation. I mean, they certainly use it to their advantage now, but I want to go back because I have a feeling they were behind this. But we'll see. But even if they were behind it, the Rand Corporation, I want to know who hired him to do it. Because they're not the ones in control. They're the ones hired to do this. Who hired Rand Corporation? That's what I want to know. All right. The official story was quite surreal. Well, let me do this again. Why fake the broadcast on 9/11? I'm going to just read it one more time. The 9/11 TV broadcasts were designed to sell a fictitious terror attack to the world. By replacing real-life events of the day, which were the World Trade Center demolitions, with fake imagery. The official story was quite surreal, as were the TV images of the day and the preposterous tale of 19 kids roundly outfoxing the U.S. air defense. It is essential to judge with one's own eyes the broadcast actually aired by ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, and CNN. What about the amateur videos? All the other videos endlessly replayed on TV were replaced only later. They were released. Not that day, but later. They have all been extensively analyzed by scores of video analysts. Each and every video snippet of amateur imagery has been methodically dissected and compared, and empirically proved to be nothing else than computer-generated fabrications. Do it yourself. Find yourself a video expert. Take him one of these 9/11 videos and have him analyze it. They're going to say the same thing that Clues Forum says. That video is nothing else than a computer-generated fabrication. How were private videos impeded? In order for the 9/11 TV deception to succeed, full visual control of Manhattan had to be in place. The existence of EMP and HERF technology is indisputable, Only the hypothesis of it being used on 9/11 remains unverifiable. It is, however, a reasonable postulation supported by a series of electronic blackouts which occurred in New York City that morning. I'm going to read that again in case you didn't realize. It is, however, a reasonable postulation that an electromagnetic countermeasures were used because there were a series of electronic blackouts which occurred in New York City that morning. In any event, the logic of using the logic of using EMPs and HERF hold water and effectively explains the ruse with disarming simplicity. No private photography of real-life events was allowed. Thus, the imagery aired by the TV networks feared no comparison and was passed off as reality. All right. The next one is called Deconstructing 9/11, the Rationale of the 9/11 Hoax. So I'm going to put that into the chat if anybody wants to come and follow along. The Rationale of the 9/11 Hoax. If you have come to terms with the fact that 9/11 was a massive money-making scheme and, of course, a pretext to wage a hugely profitable war and wars, the basic rationale behind this grand deception should hopefully become clearer. It is essential to consider all the variables which such an audacious false flag operation would entail and what precautions its plotters must have observed. The grand deception plan was undoubtedly meant to be foolproof and, ideally, free of unnecessary elements of risk and opposition. There was simply no rationale for the 9/11 plotters to commit a mass murder of some 3,000 mostly white-collar professionals, brokers, bankers, financial analysts, etc., whose families would likely have access to first-rate uptown legal assistance. Surely, killing that many people would have been utterly senseless. And don't call me Shirley. Self-inflicted aggravation on the parts of the perpetrators, since they could reliably rely on the full compliant top brass of the mainstream media, they would have used this unique, exclusive asset to its full potential. Ever since day one, the major hurdle for many people to even start considering 9/11 being an inside job has been, I can't believe my own government would murder 3,000 of their own people. Once that psychological obstacle is removed, it should become apparent that the whole operation consisted essentially of a covert demolition of a redundant asbestos-filled building complex. To kill thousands of people in the process never was an envisaged proposition, as it would have encountered severe resistance among the insiders involved. The second objective was to blame this destruction on a foreign enemy, an inanely fanciful, outlandish tale involving hijacked airlines used as missiles was concocted to be supported by digital imagery and special movie effects. How this was done is thoroughly illustrated in Simon Schack's September Clues video analysis. And it's all here, folks. You just have to come here and get it. Now let's read about what didn't happen on 9/11, the deceptive imagery. No unauthorized private imagery was captured on September 11, 2001. Most, if not all, of the imagery we have of that morning's events is prefabricated and/or manipulated. The September Clues video research and many similar independent studies have amply demonstrated the unfettered complicity of the mainstream media, a disturbingly reliable partner in crime. The 9/11 morning broadcasts were, by and large, digital computer animations, and all successive so-called amateur video snippets featuring crashing planes or collapsing towers have likewise been methodically exposed as a series of poorly crafted forgeries. The defining time windows of the day between the tower strikes and tower collapses, including both of those, were certainly not meant to be captured on film, much less aired on television. As it is, no real footage of the real life's morning events is to be found. To be sure, the existence of specific military-grade technology able to achieve this precise aim is well documented. In all likelihood, electromagnetic weapons, EMP and HERF, routinely employed in war zones, were employed on the 9/11 day, causing the temporary jamming of all unshielded camera equipment. With no real footage being captured, the TV networks could safely broadcast their substitute imagery of the morning's events. So I'm going to break in here a bit and talk about Judy Wood and her fanciful weapons from space. The problem with that is all Judy Wood is doing is analyzing the video footage. You can't analyze video footage. The video footage is fake. So any researcher that analyzes the video footage for real life events like weapons and toasted cars and architects and engineers for 9/11, they analyze the footage for how the buildings fell. You can't do that, dudes. It's all fake. All the video footage is fake. You can't analyze it for real world responses or real world effects. Not going to happen. It's fake. Can't do it. Doesn't exist. You got to move on. If a researcher hasn't figured out yet that the footage is faked, most of the 9/11 footage, then you're not worth your weight in YouTube videos. No, you're not. You're analyzing the wrong thing, dude. You're all analyzing the wrong thing. And is that an accident that all the engineers and architects for 9/11 and the Judy Woods and the Jim Fetzers are analyzing the footage for real life? Is that on purpose? Of course it's not. They're not that stupid. They must be paid opposition then, or they must be the worst researchers on the planet if they haven't figured out that the 9/11 video footage is all faked. Moving on. I've heard people talk about maybe it's part CGI, part real life. But if you think about, this is me breaking in now, not Simon. If you think about it, they would need precise timing. And they would need the complicity of a whole lot more people when to jam that real footage in and when not to. That's what it feels like to me. If it's all fake, then all you got to do is hand them that one piece. Here, play that. That's all they'd have to do. But if they want to do part live and part real, then they'd have to get the timing right. They'd have to get all these other people to be involved, when to initiate the timing, when to press start. It just was so much more complicated if they incorporate real imagery. But if it's all fake, it's just from one stream. You just need one complicit person. Boom, press the on button. All right, this next chapter is called What Did Happen on 9/11. The ground operations in Lower Manhattan called for a coordinated demolition of the entire WTC complex, 9 buildings in all. Just what type of explosive forces caused this destruction is hotly debated among scientists galore, yet it is but a secondary and ultimately doomed endeavor, since there is no certifiably authentic rubble nor any authentic imagery to examine. We may, however, assume, as of the event's timelines, that the demolition process started a full hour after the alleged plane strikes, leaving plenty of time to evacuate the area. The briskly displaced bystanders, as well as more distant eyewitnesses, would have had a very slim chance to make out the precise dynamics of the collapses as, most plausibly, smoke screens, military obscurance, starting with blocking the WTC from view. The time window of the Lower Manhattan evacuation was filled in with two convenient yet blatantly phony distraction dramas, the Pentagon and the Shanksville mock event. These two diversions also helped sway the attention away from the absurd absence of helicopter rescues at the World Trade Center. Yeah, what about that? They just let those people die? No one ran up to the roof and said, "Grab me, grab me." None of that happened? No, I guess it didn't, did it? In real life, no. As it is, the improbable tale of 3,000 souls trapped for up to 100 minutes in the World Trade Center top floors with no rooftop rescues due to locked access door. I don't know. Could you open a locked access door in an emergency? They're like steel and stuff. They might be hard to get to. But they weren't. There was no one there to rescue anyway, so. The WTC towers were empty. To be sure, all photographs and video snippets depicting people or silhouettes thereof falling down the side of the WTCs have also been comprehensively exposed as digital forgeries. Only time will tell whether anyone really was killed on 9/11, under what circumstances, but as things stand, the bulk of available evidence suggests otherwise. I think he's talking about the jumpers. All you have to do is zoom in on the jumpers. They're people in positions of, like, they're standing or sitting, but to make them a jumper, they just turn them upside down so it looks like they're falling. But if you turn them right side up, they look like they could have been leaning against a wall or sitting in a chair. I mean, it's the worst. And as unpleasant as it is to look at the jumper videos, and I think that's why they didn't need to spend a lot of time on those, people don't want to look at that nasty stuff. It's very displeasing. I was doing some research the other day on, what was it? I think it was Oklahoma City bombing. It's still, even though those injuries are so dumb and so fake, they have this stupid gauze wrapped around people's heads. That's not how you use gauze. You don't wrap it. It's ridiculous. But it was still unpleasant looking at all the fake blood. Even fake blood is unpleasant to look at, along with real blood. All right, this paragraph is titled, "How Many Died on 9/11? Perhaps and probably none. A fanciful contention? No, not if measured against the thoroughly fanciful, grotesquely contrived and conflicting 9/11 victims' memorials. A close scrutiny of the numerous available listings of the alleged 9/11 victims provides countless indications that are, by and large, outright fabrications. Most of them are still easily accessible on the internet by the general public. Yet some of them have been, mysteriously, shut down. Of course, it's true that the World Trade Center was fully evacuated. Thus follows that many memorials listing the 9/11 victims must, in turn, be fabricated, too. As elaborated below, that is precisely what they appear to be. The 9/11 victims' memorials simply do not stand up to scrutiny and comparison. The sheer bulk of inconsistencies and absurdities pervasive in those unseemingly listings unveils their true nature. Just another piece of the grand deception. Let us see why, point by point." All right, now we're going to look at the memorial problems. And believe me, they have been gone through by so many people. But unless you document it, it doesn't mean anything. So thank God Hoy and Simon and others at Clues Forums are documenting the things that are wrong with these memorials. Memorial problem one. The totals nonsense. At a first glance at the various 9/11 memorials, we see that each and every one reports a different casualty toll. Here's a selection of the total figures, all ostensibly meant to represent official and definitive listings of all 9/11 victims for the World Trade Center, Pentagon, and the four flights, minus the 19 hijackers. So the September 11th memorial, 3,181. The CNN memorial, 2,985. Wikipedia states 2,977 dead. Fox News states 2,812 dead. La Repubblica states 2,752 dead, and America Forever Memorial states 2,467 dead. As absurd as this may seem, it is a fact that more than 8 years after 9/11, there is still no consensus whatsoever on the total death toll. Indeed, the first and the last of the above-listed memorial shows a discrepancy of a full 714 names. These are entirely verifiable figures in full public view. Of course, even a discrepancy of only two or three victims should be considered unacceptable in this event. Let's hope that the National 9/11 Memorial, currently under construction in Manhattan, will finally reveal to the world the exact number of the 9/11 victims. Whatever the figure will be, and which names will be retained or discarded, the fact remains that for all of 8 years, virtually all memorials have displayed wildly conflicting casualty tolls. It's a little disturbing. They can't figure out how many really died. Is that on purpose? I always wonder that, to keep people guessing. Or they're just sloppy. Either way. Most will remember that in the days, weeks, if not months following 9/11, the news media kept reporting what, admittedly, were speculative casualty figures. The 20,000 victims soon became 10,000. Ugh. I remember the 30,000. I was laying on my couch crying. 30,000 dead souls because of my new people I adopted. I was mortified. I couldn't believe the destruction they caused. It didn't make any sense at all. But it makes sense now. Yet the first official casualty toll was still a hefty 6,729, reported by the New York Times. Then a full 12 days after the event, Major Giuliani went on record with an estimated 6,333 victims. No, 333. That's his number there to tell the other guys, dudes, this is fake, don't bother. The other power brokers, don't bother, this is our deal. 6,333, a figure which was touted for some time before gradually and inexplicably dwindling to less than half that figure. How, one must ask, could it be possible to take weeks to obtain reasonably accurate figures of the World Trade Center tenants, missing employees? Now, this was no tsunami sweeping unfathomably populated coastline of Indonesia, Thailand, and Sri Lanka. These were two confined building collapses in civilized Manhattan. Undeniably, in the shock post-disaster climate, the inflated death tolls effectively boosted the drama and the public outrage over the murderous bin Laden attacks. However, as weeks went by, Mayor Giuliani's 6,333 estimate started raising a few eyebrows. In time, the news media came up with a shocking news story, and the tale went, a horde of greedy, despicable fraudsters were usurping the 9/11 compensation fund, claiming the loss of non-existent, totally made-up relatives. A long string of such scams were reported and denounced with righteous outrage for weeks on end. Ultimately, even though a whopping total of 400 such callous con men schemes were reported, it did little to account for even remotely explain Giuliani's previous 6,333 estimate. And he said that on September 23, 2001. The grand deception was already cracking and, unbeknown to most, initiating its own inevitable collapse. Now, some people will argue that these wild inaccuracies were brought about by the havoc and confusion surrounding the 9/11 events. Fine, let us not argue about it, and agree for now on at least one incontrovertible fact. Between the first official New York Times death toll figure of 6,729 and the figure found on, for instance, the American Forever Memorial, 2,467, we have a discrepancy of 4,262 people. These are plain and simple arithmetics. I said it fancy like that. Lastly, let it be said that the vast majority of the 9/11 victims are not listed in the Social Security Death Index. The few that are to be found listed on the Social Security Death Index are usually names that have been cited in the press, more prominent in public victims. You think it wouldn't be too hard, I'm going to break in here for a minute, to figure out how many people died, just the employees. Each tenant, say how many employees family members can't get a hold of. That's it. Did he come home today? Hey, did John come home today, Mary? Hi, I'm calling from Bankers Company. Did Johnny come home? He didn't. Okay, we'll put him down as a probable victim. That can't be that hard. That's why we know it's a scam. All right, this paragraph is titled Memorial Problems, the Ghost Names Nonsense. So, how do these conflicting death tolls translate as one takes a close look at the various memorials? Does that mean we may find random ghost victims listed on some memorials, complete with tributes and obituaries, who are simply missing on others? Yes. It is there. Yes, is there a significant amount of such nonsensical examples, such as to rule out innocent sloppiness on the part of various memorial curators? Yes. Let's take a look, for instance, at the Wall of American Memorial, the Wall of Americans Memorial. At the very top of letter A, we find two people named Alvii. It's spelled A-A-L-Y-I-G-H. Alvii. I don't even know how to say that. So there's Diane Alvii and Justin Alvii. Diane Alvii worked in the fifth floor of what? It just says fifth floor. Justin Alvii worked at the World Trade Center. Which one? There's two. Inexplicably, two Alvii's, as indeed many other names, are found only in some memorials and are absent from others, such as CNN's. Now imagine for a minute that your name is Alvii. Would you not try contacting the offending 9/11 memorials and have them correct their listing? Who are the Alvii's? Or perhaps we should ask, why are the Alvii's to be found only in selected memorials? Is there indeed anyone called Alvii? A-A-L-Y-I-G-H. On this planet, apart from Diane Alvii. And if you think of it, Diane Alvii, die in a lie. Or Justin Alvii, just in a lie. And a lot of these names do this. They make other names. One may be tempted to surmise that some brave whistleblower was trying to tell us some truth about 9/11. It's all a lie, A-A-L-Y-I-G-H. Interestingly, the Wall of Americans Memorial has now been shut down. This is the message we find on the blank internet page, which explains its sudden closure. It says, notice, due to the excessive amount of spam and fraudulent comments posted on the site, we have been forced to take it offline. Thanks to all who have posted memorials and contributed to the site since the attacks of September 11, 2001. Corporate Web Services, Inc. All you have to do, you don't have to take it down, just close the posting. Take what's there. Then, staying with the letter A, there's the case of Mrs. C.C. Ada, A-A-D-A. Another of the many ghost names to be found bouncing around from various 9/11 memorials. Now, if you Google AADA, you will bump right into the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. Ada. How do you even say that name? The first name is Cici, which is C-I-C-I. The last name is AADA. Cici Ada. Does that make another name? see, Sieta. A coincidence, perhaps, but since a number of characters rotating around the 9/11 saga, Gary Wells, Bob McElvain, Donna Marsh, O'Connor, etc., have been exposed as professional actors, one may reasonably wonder whether this also could be the work of a heroic whistleblower. The fact remains that C.C. Atta and both Olliyes are only to be found on a few 9/11 memorials. So, C.I.C.I. is like S.E.E. See? It's the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. See? Could they be trying to tell us something? There are plenty more examples of ghost names appearing only in selected 9/11 memorials. To list them all in this article, with comprehensive cross-comparisons between all the lists, is not realistic and would surely be a tedious read. I don't know, Simon, I could read 3,000 names off real fast. Yeah, it'd be tedious, to say the least. Below is a list of 9/11 memorials. For each one, we have the number of people listed under the surname initials Q, X, Y, and Z. So what he did is he picked letters least likely to have a last name. So in the CNN memorial, people with the last name starting with Q, there's 8 of them. The Voices of September 11th memorial, the people whose last names start with Q, there's also 8. But in another one, there's 7, in another one, there's 16, in another one, there's 9, in another one, there's 11. 9/11. That was clever. Okay, what about X? Names that start with X? Nobody's name started with X. What about Y? In the CNN memorial and the Voices of September, there's 20 people with last names that start with Y. In Memoriam Online, there's 15 people whose last names start with Y. In the September 11th memorial, there's 25 people whose last names start with the letter Y. And the Fox memorial, there's 13 people whose last name starts with the letter Y. And Prayers for Peace, there's 24 people whose last name starts with the letter Y. And let's do just Z. Whose names start with the letter Z? In one memorial, it's 24. In another, it's 25. In another, it's 19. In another, it's 26. In another, it's 24. Then 23. And then 26 again. These are supposed to be the dead people from 9/11, the almost 3,000 dead. They can't even get Z straight. All right. Memorial problems, the prosaic nonsense. A common aspect of the various 9/11 memorials are the consistently sappy and contrived tributes supposedly posted by families, co-workers, and friends. We are talking about thousands of brief writings, which, of course, require some steady patience to sift through. However, and for what it's worth, I can personally testify that it's hard to find any 9/11 tribute graced with any ring of authenticity. I'm going to stop right there. When I was interviewing David Weiss, he kept saying this thing, and his mother, who still misses him to this day, she lives in Connecticut, or whatever he was saying, but he used that phrase, and who still misses him today. Well, no shit. My dad died. I still miss him. Who doesn't? I still miss my dad to this day. Why say such a stupid thing? It's like saying, oh, you're sad about a loved one dying. Well, of course you are. But I think David was reading from a script. So that script requires him to say that he's given. It requires him to say things like, the building collapsed just like you saw it on TV. The building collapsed looked like a reverse mushroom cloud. My friend who died on line 11, he is still missed by loved ones today. Well, those are all lines from the 9/11 handbook. So, David, if you want to sound more authentic, you got to give up those lines, dude. That's ridiculous. You don't sound real or authentic at all. All right, let's keep reading. The prevalent impression is that they are written by the same person, or at best by a gang of bored, unimaginative novelists. Naturally, some will retort to this as a subjective personal interpretation. I can only encourage everyone to spend some time reading those tributes for themselves. Taken together, those tributes read like an endlessly reshuffled concoction of mawkish and tear-jerking rhetoric. I'm confident that anyone armed with a critical mind and a healthy sense of humor will actually enjoy sifting through these tributes as an eye-opening, entertaining, and slightly surreal experience. Best of all, this enjoyment comes with the odd sense of relief and appeasement as one gradually comes to the realization that, one, the 9/11 memorials are all in conflict with each other, two, the 9/11 memorials are anything but credible tributes to real victims of families of a real terror attack, three, perhaps in the light of these facts, few or anybody died in the 9/11 attacks. And then Simon has a note at the bottom. I welcome anyone asserting to be a family member of a 9/11 victim to come forward with documentation, such as would be admissible in a court of law, of their loved one's existence and passing. I can be reached on my private email posted on the contact page. All right, memorial problems number four, the portrait morphing evidence. Three main observations can be drawn from a methodical cross-scrutiny of many 9/11 memorials, which feature portraits of the victims, henceforth referred to as entities. Most of the entities found in the memorials are represented with two, and no more than two, apparently different portraits. That's number one. Number two, when two seemingly different portraits are given in portraits of a given entity are compared, they reveal more often than not striking similarities in facial expressions, pose, angle, perspective, lighting, and reflections. Number three, striking similarities are also observed between separate, often alphabetically adjacent entities of the same or different sex. While a few such cases might be expected in a list of, say, 2,500 plus portraits, the sheer frequency of such instances featuring seemingly cloned facial attributes cannot reasonably be explained in a statistical sense. So it can't be coincidence or happenstance. Naturally, this topic needs to be visualized by the reader since it deals with photographic issues. Please see our illustrated article for image-supported descriptions of this issue, the memorial scams, and I'll put that link in. I don't think I'm going to read that. Yeah, it's a lot to read, but you also get a lot of images. You get Elizabeth Wainio, something like it. You see all, they take like one face and make a whole bunch of different portraits out of her. And you're like, wait, I think that's the same face in all these different pictures. What are they like with different backgrounds, but the exact same smile, hair? It's awkward and weird. All right, so I'll put that in there. Other interesting issues related to the metadata or EXIF data embedded in all the JPEG picture files will, in time, be comprehensively expounded and added to in this article. Finally, for a comprehensive study on the 9/11 memorials, please download and read the VIXIM Report by Hoy Polloi, and I'll put that in as well. VIXIM Report, amazing bit of research there about all the victims. You gotta see it. Good stuff. This is like, I'm just thinking back of the research it would take you to do even to look at this. It takes some time. You'd have to put some time aside, go through it, read it, look at it. This is a problem I have with my husband. He's not willing to do the research. So when we have conversations, He makes it sound like I'm a lunatic. I'm the lunatic? No, I'm not the lunatic. I did my research. But he won't do his research. And I do my research. So how can we discuss 9/11 together if he's not going to do his research? And this is what I'd say with everyone. Unless someone does their research, what's to discuss? There's nothing to discuss. We're going to be on different parts here. He's going to be arguing about he knows someone who knows someone who died because he has relatives in New York, and I'm going to be arguing, yeah, but who? What's their name? And he doesn't, I don't know. Why am I supposed to know? He's going to be arguing about too many, what, everyone's in it? And I'm going to be saying, no, only a couple people had to be. The news readers didn't even, they had to be in it, I guess, because I think a couple of them had the backdrop of the 9/11 toasty towers going on, and that couldn't have been live. That had to be like green screen ahead of time. So they were in on it. And whoever had to press play in the studio, they were in on it for the pre-made ahead video footage. But if my husband's not willing to even read that research, what do we have to discuss? Nothing. It's a waste of time. He's not willing to do the research, so... But kudos to you if you are. You want to know the truth. Good job. All right, memorial problems number 5. The VIP victims, or VIXIMs. Some of the more prominent casualties of 9/11, such as the Flight 93 hero, Todd M. Beamer, have long been exposed as stolen identities from previously deceased names. Some of the more prominent casualties of 9/11, such as the Flight 93 hero, Todd M. Beamer, have long been exposed as stolen identities from previously deceased namesakes. The Barbara Olson story also turned out to be a fraud when Ted Olson, George Bush's Solicitor General, was caught altering 3 times his tale of her alleged phone calls from Flight 77. Similarly, the 9/11 victim number 0001, or the first victim, is Father Michael Judge, was another faith-based saga for devout believers. At least 3 different versions of the causes and circumstances of his death were published by the news media. The evacuation of his corpse from the World Trade Center has also been exposed as another stage photo op. In other words, the stories surrounding the 9/11's VIP casualties are riddled with so many questions as to be divested of any sort of credibility. With such an abundance of deceptive media-promoted bunkum, it is perfectly reasonable to question every single official news story to emerge from the events of September 11th, 2001. Yeah, Father Michael Judge. I mean, it's weird, first of all, right? To have a last name like Judge. Is he a judge? Is he a father? Is it Father Judge Michael? No, Judge Michael Father? What? Okay, so anyway, let's go back to Father Michael Judge. If you see his pictures, these 9/11 pictures, they're carrying him out in a chair. I guess he's dead or something, but he's dead in a chair. And everybody's facing forward. Even he's facing forward in a chair as they're carrying him out. I'm like, that's ridiculous. If I'm carrying a dead man, I'd carry him the most efficient way. Not trying to make sure his face is facing forward so we can get a nice picture of him for the news media. I'd throw him over my back or just drag him or something if he's dead, if I was in a hurry. Alrighty. Let's go to the next paragraph. I'm going to do about 5 more minutes of reading, then wrap it up. Let's read. I have choices. Pondering questions of strategy and opportunity, or there's too many people involved. These are the titles of the paragraphs. Upholding the 9/11 myth, actors and actresses. these have mostly pictures. There's pictures they talk about. So let's do pondering questions of strategy and opportunity. I think this is a big one that keeps people from believing 9/11 was faked. Is that they're like, motive. What's the motive to kill 3,000 people? What possibly could be the motive? So, let's read this and find out. Pondering questions of strategy and opportunity. One question which naturally emerges from the study of the 9/11 memorial is, even if many victims' identities appear to be entirely made up or by a computer database, could it still mean that a number of real people were killed on 9/11? Or did the 9/11 claim no victims at all? If we are to apply a logical thought process to this particular issue, we need to look at questions of strategy and opportunity, which the perpetrators must have prefigured. Surely, any sensible investigation must start by defining the type of crime that is being investigated. By defining the scope and the objectives of the crime, we should be able to rule out what the perpetrators themselves would have ruled out in terms of unnecessary risks and liabilities. Was 9/11 designed as a barbaric murdering spree, or was it more of a gigantic bank robbery? Let us make an educated guess and say the latter is the case. Bank robberies are considered terrible failures by the robbers themselves in the event of any bystander, guard, police officer getting killed. The sole objective of a bank assault is that of stealing money, never that of committing murder. The penal aggravations of manslaughter is most unwelcome to any professional gangster or bank robber. A grave mistake to be carefully avoided. Oh yeah, we have bank robbers here in Washington. You know, it makes local media, but I don't think it ever makes national media. Which leads me to believe it's probably true. Once something makes national media, I less believe in it. Yeah, they almost never kill anybody. They want to be in and out. Because they know if they kill anybody, there's going to be a bigger investigation and more police will be put in the role of trying to hunt that bastard down who killed somebody. So exactly, Simon, don't kill anyone is the number one rule of a bank robber, and don't be identified by anyone either. That's the other rule. In and out, clean. No one knows who you are. As we have seen, a large amount of alleged victims appear to be mock-up identities. Of course, precisely how many remain to be verified. Yet consider this. If 300 deposit boxes are emptied by a gang of bank robbers and fingerprints are found in just 30 boxes, would they be suspected only for robbing just those 30? Or would the court of law assume that they also robbed the other 270? The idea that nobody was killed on 9/11 is usually and predictably rejected offhand by many folks is outrageous and unbelievable. I'm going to stop there for a minute. Ego. I think ego has a lot to do with this. People's egos. Because in my head, I found my brain put together the sadness and the terror of that day's events. So if I have to accept that no one died, I have to accept my brain is lying to me. People don't want to do that. I don't care if the media lies to me. Who gives a shit about the media? I am emotionally and egotistically involved in myself. So I would be more upset that my own brain lied to me and that I couldn't figure out it was a ruse. I would feel embarrassed that it was a ruse than that the media lied to me. And just to prove my point, in New York, I had a friend, and she got embezzled out of $10,000. It wasn't embezzled. It was a trick. She was walking down the street, and some guy was crying or something like that, and she stopped to find out what was wrong. And all he needed was he had $50,000 in a bank, but he needed $10,000 to get it out. Now, you're going to say, this is ridiculous. No one would fall for it. But what happens is this guy on the street, he's got his a couple patsies, like another lady. So when my friend, her name was Miriam, so Miriam is talking to this guy. And then she's like trying to figure out how to help him, but she doesn't want to give him her money or her bank account or any information. But another person comes up while he's crying, and that person is willing to put some money in a bank account for him so that he can get his money out. It's like he had to pay a fee or some stupid thing. I don't remember. But because my friend Miriam saw this other lady come up and volunteer her services, she wasn't quite ready yet. But guess what? A third person came up. This guy had two patsies waiting. And when that second person came up and was willing to give their money, she decided to give her money too. It wasn't until the second person came up. The reason I'm telling you this story is she was so embarrassed. Because in the end, she went with the three guys to the bank, put her money in, never got it out, never heard from the guy again. His name was fake. His license was fake. Everything was fake about him. She got $10,000 stolen from her in like a second. She was so embarrassed, she didn't tell anybody for years. She was embarrassed at herself that she got duped. Not once was she mad at the guy. She's like, what a jerk. What an a-hole. I can't believe he did that to me. No, when she told me the story, she said, I was so embarrassed. I was so embarrassed that I got taken advantage of like that. And that feels like 9/11 to me. People are embarrassed they got taken advantage of, and they don't want to admit it. They are protecting their egos. And I think the people who plan this know that. They know exactly how our brains work. And every day they find out better and better how to manipulate the populace. All right, let's get back. All right. I can't remember where I left off in the paragraph, so I'm just going to read it again. The idea that nobody was killed on 9/11 is usually and predictably rejected offhand by many folks as outrageous and unbelievable. Others will accept that some simulation took place, but that a number of real people must have died. So let us imagine the intermediate scenario, say, of 1,000 people being killed that day. If this were true, an immediate problem emerges. What if those 1,000 families at some stage discovered that the other 2,000 families were untraceable or non-existent? It is quite unlikely that the 9/11 planners would have run the risk of such a dire, worst-case scenario. Imagine a horde of angry families filing an avalanche of executive court orders, all demanding access to public records and official verifications. Truly a recipe for disaster. Surely the 9/11 plotters didn't want any of that. Thus, we may reasonably assume that every precaution was taken to ensure that no civilian lawsuits might spoil the show. In all logic, the assassination of any number of people on 9/11 was a definite no-no, a stupid and senseless aggravation to be avoided at all costs. The chief directive of the grand 9/11 deception plan may well have been zero casualties. Zero casualties. Nobody dies. Nobody gets dead. Unless we know about it. Unless it's a fake person. With no family members to sue our asses and uncover the truth. All right, the last paragraph I'm going to read is too many people involved. This is a good one, because this is what my husband said. With all those people involved, what? I'm like, well, they do it today. I did a post one time in the forum of just making a movie. The last Star Trek that was made, even actors in movies, they can't tell you the plot, what's going to happen at the end. It's a secret. Even friggin' actors sign non-disclosure statements. They're not going to blow the whistle on themselves. They got a pretty good deal there when an actor gets a big part like a Star Trek movie. Man, you're going to be working with Spock. You don't want to ruin that. That's some pretty cool stuff right there. They don't tell We have thousands of people that work on a movie set. We have the writers. We have the set designers, the costume people, tons of support personnel. Thousands of people work on one movie, and they keep it quiet. So you're telling me military can't? Every day military shit goes down, it's kept quiet. How is 9/11 any different? It's super easy to keep people quiet. Super easy to keep people from telling the truth. They do it all the time, every day. Look at all the movies we put out where we don't find out what happens at the end because everyone keeps it a secret. What about all the military operations going around that people can't talk about? These soldiers, they don't even tell. They keep it secret. So why couldn't an operation like 9/11 be kept secret? Of course it could. The almost unlimited resources of the 9/11 planners allowed for a multifaceted simulation, which certainly involved a great many people by and conspiracy standards, by any conspiracy standards, only a few of which needed to be fully briefed about all the details of the plan. A recurring objection skeptics keep raising is that too many people had to be involved, therefore it would have had to been impossible to keep them all quiet. Not so. Allow me to set forth a brief personal perspective on that issue. As the son of an idealist Norwegian sociologist who pluckily fought the Sicilian Mafia with a typewriter, I often like to remind people of the concept of omerta. In Sicily, tens of thousands of honest citizens know perfectly well the names and whereabouts of the Mafia bosses, yet they are kept silent for decades with bribes and fear. Historically, this is a nigh but deniable fact. Cold cash and hot threats have never failed to put a lid on people's mouths. A limited number of people were needed to pull off the 9/11 hoax, a hoax which relied on an incalculable larger budget than any small-town mafia hit. Needless to say, the U.S. executive branch also firmly controls all key government-appointed agencies, an asset no criminal organization could ever dream of. Most importantly, every single major news corporation has been, in the last 50 years or so, thoroughly infiltrated and co-opted by the higher echelons of power. Today, their globalized monopoly of world news makes them the single most powerful persuasion machine ever known to mankind. In fact, their unchallenged control of information was the crucial player in the 9/11 plan. Most lower-level operatives involved in the execution of the plan were induced, much as the average Joe public, to believe in the televised version of the events. Hence, the too many people involved argument fails on two counts. Number one, it is effectively disproved by historical precedent, and number two, It does not account for the wide, unprecedented range of assets available to the 9/11 planners. Very nice, Simon. It does not account for the wide, unprecedented range of assets available to the 9/11 planners. And boy, isn't TV an asset? Oh my God, it's an asset. I was looking up. Who was it? Oh, Rand Corporation. I was looking up people on their board and on the Brookings Institute. I was looking up their people on their board, and they have a lot of TV moguls on their boards. So if they wanted to make some sort of psyop, they already got the people involved. And anyway, how do you know what happens in a TV station or a newspaper? How do you know? Everything I know about a television producer comes from a TV movie, a TV show, or a movie. Everything I know. I have done no independent research at all to find out what that looks like inside a TV studio. Interestingly, I was going to talk about this at some point, might as well say it now. At the school where I teach, we often bring in people from the public they get, it's called a CTI, something like, it's, they can get a teaching certificate because they have experience in their field, which you can't get in a university. So there was one guy, he was a machinist. He tooled things. So because of that, he just had to take a few courses and he could be a teacher in the machining shop. Well, we have a TV studio in our school, and most schools we have the students do the morning announcements or the afternoon announcements or however you want to say it, but a lot of it's recorded with the video camera. You have the students saying what's going to happen for the day or the week, important information, and they tape it like it's a newscast. Well, the woman we have who teaches that class, she works for Fox News in Tacoma. She was working part-time there as an editor. And she's leaving our school and going back to Fox News. I often wanted to ask her, you know, how involved she is. But from what she said, and she talked about it quite a bit when she was leaving, it sounded like her job was more technical, to make sure everything ran smooth. Her job wasn't to decide what stories to talk about. And I think that's where the control of the media is. What stories are they allowed to talk about? And who decides what stories are talked about? That's the person. You only need one person in every TV station to control it. That's the person who decides what the stories are. You only need one person to be in on it for each TV station. That's it. Just one. One's enough. One's all you need. The one who controls what stories are aired and what are not. That's it. Just one. It's not that complicated to control the media. And I think there's a big PSYOP campaign out there about what the media really is. Because in every damn movie I watch, they do this thing where... I was just watching Big Monster from Japan. The big giant lizard. Japan. What's the big giant lizard in Japan that eats people? The story? The myth? Japanese lizard monster. God, well, just when I want to think of a name, I can't. Godzilla! See? Alright, I was just watching Godzilla, the latest release movie, with my husband. And what they do is, the guy is watching a TV report of Godzilla smashing the town, and then he looks out the window and sees Godzilla smashing the town. Now, why have such redundancy? How does that help the story move along? It doesn't. I think it's a psychological operation to make you think that TV reports reality, when in fact the opposite is true. I've known, there's another movie, I talked about it before on KHAM Radio. It's the one where the aliens were attacking LA. Same thing, you got a TV, and they had the same TV set they used in like 8 different shots. One time it was in a fishing village, so there was a net kind of hanging over one edge of the TV. I'm like, oh, that's a different TV, all right. But the same thing. It showed the aliens shooting their ammunition at the city. The guy looks out the window, sees the aliens shooting ammunition at the city. What does that say? That tells you subconsciously that the news reports reality, when in fact, we know it doesn't. So I think every day people are subjected to this type of subliminal messaging, if you could call it that. And I don't think they even know it. Just like the plucky reporter of the newspaper. I'm going to do the story whether you like me to do it or not. Superman. What was Superman all about? He's a reporter. That whole movie, that whole TV series, isn't about Superman. It's about convincing you that newspapers report reality. That's all. That's what that was about, when in fact they don't. So anytime a newspaper reporter or a TV reporter is in a movie, or they talk about a TV like CNN reports and it's in a movie, it's there to convince you that TVs and newspapers report reality, when in fact they don't. All right, we have come to the end of KHAM Radio. Thank you for hanging with me as we went through the September Clues tour guide. And I would, if you have some time this summer, get your iPad out there, go sit in the sun, and get your big hat on, just so you can see the iPad screen. Otherwise, enjoy the sun. Get lots of sun. It's good for you, vitamin D. I was just talking with Chris today, and yeah, I don't believe the sun is bad for you. Ozone hole, all fake. I looked it up. That's fake shit. I think the sun is good for you. It's vitamin D, super important to your body. Get out there, enjoy some sun this summer. Does sun cause skin cancer? I'm just going to talk about this for like 2 minutes. I don't think so. Because my dad, he's really white, and he got skin cancer on his forehead, where the sun is, right? But he also got skin cancer on his back, where there's no sun, and he never goes shirtless because he's so white and he burns. So if the sun really caused skin cancer, why did he get one on his back, where the sun never sees it? So, see, I don't think it's something else. Probably it's a lack of vitamin D that causes it, is what I'm thinking. Do your own research, though. And also come and see the tour guide to the September Clues research, which includes the power of imagery and includes the memorial problems. It includes the rationale of the 9/11 hoax, which includes the victim report by Hoy, did a great job. There's also the 9/11 memorial scams. There's so many good things to look at. The research has already been done. It's just there for the reading. If you have friends or family, this is a very scientific, I would say. It's a good resource to show family and friends. It's just pretty black and white. It's black and white, man. There's really no, there's no flowery stuff to take you off task. No fanciful Judy Wood nonsense. No fanciful weapons that aren't believable in the first place. Everything down to earth and believable. All right, let's end KHAM with another sampling from Simon Shack's new album, Realitivity. This song is called The Space Station, which we know Space Station has some issues too. That's a fun one to research because nobody died. So it's a lot more pleasant to go through all the fakery of the space station. Have a good summer weekend. This has been KHAM Radio. This is July 2nd, 2015. This has been episode 41.
Just a way to